Thought Bubble Audio.
Look, up in the sky!
You will never find the more wretched hive of scum and villainy.
Welcome to Beer with Geeks with Tim and Frank.
Who are you?
I'm Batman.
I am Iron Man.
Your friendly neighborhood Spider-Man.
Hi, Christopher. I'm Nero.
My name is Inigo Montoya.
You're a wizard, Harry.
A couple of guys with a couple of beers and a whole lot of pop culture nostalgia.
Make it so, number one.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Beatles.
Name the dog Indiana.
Life finds a way.
I am serious, and don't call me Shirley.
Now sit back and crack open a cold one, because it's time for Beer with Geeks.
It comes in pints?
Shaken, not stirred.
Great Scott!
I was way off. I knew it started with an S, though.
Hi, and welcome to Beer with Geeks, the podcast where we reminisce about our geeky childhoods with our un-geeky beer. I'm Tim.
And I'm Frank.
And today's topic of conversation is Frank's beer. Frank, what are you drinking today?
Well, you know, okay, I was hoping we could sit down and spend some time talking about this. So it's actually Harpoon Returns.
Harpoon Returns.
Yeah, Winter Warmer again, and it's returning, and it's back. But this time, it's actually less about the beer and more about his childhood rival, the guy who bullied him as a kid.
You're talking about Sam Adams, obviously,
yeah.
Who is also returning.
Is he? Oh,
he is. Yeah.
Cool. If only we had a third main character who had like a really weird story that didn't really make a lot of sense. That would be optimal.
Well, I have sitting next to me a cookie that I made from spare ingredients in my cabinet. So
it's made
with flour and cocoa powder honey and nutmeg and some other weird stuff.
I was going to say I don't really see the connection between these things, but actually that makes it perfect. So let's just move over with that. That's great. That's perfect.
Awesome. Okay, great.
Okay, great. So yeah, in case you haven't figured it out yet, we are spinning off of last episode and we are coming back with Batman Returns.
We
did that last time, Tim.
I am the Batman of this podcast now.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, okay. I know.
Yeah. Yep.
So we're back with Batman. He is returning, though technically he hasn't not left Gotham. So he's really returning to cinema. So yeah. the title is more metafiction than anything
That's
else.
That's true. And it's also like, yeah, he's returning, but he's only gonna be in this movie for like 12 minutes, so enjoy it while it lasts.
Right, yeah, exactly. Because this movie is really about Danny DeVito.
That's absolutely true. And it's not even about the Penguin. It's just about Danny DeVito.
It's about Danny DeVito in a fat suit, which I think is really
funny.
Which
is really redundant.
Yeah. Although if Danny DeVito was really as fat as the Penguin in this movie, I would feel terrible
for this man. I'd be worried, yeah.
Yeah.
I'd also then start to wonder, like, are the teeth real, too? Does he need a dentist?
Well, he probably does, actually. Living in a sewer for 33 years, one would hazard a guess that he does need a dentist. Well,
I would guess.
Anyway, I would guess, but let's go backward a little bit. If people are unfamiliar with this movie, came out in 1992, still directed by Tim Burton, still starring Michael Keaton, who gets first billing this time, as opposed to the film Batman, in which he plays the title character, but does not get first billing. That went to Jack Nicholson.
That's right. Well, this time they didn't have a star who they had to pay and beg to be the reason for people to see this movie.
Yeah, that's right. They just had a director to do that instead. Yeah. And so Batman Returns is a lovely Christmas film about how Christopher Walken would like to build a power plant and Michael Keaton is like, no, but you're connected to drugs and I'm a businessman. And so I know these things. And so you can't do these things. And it's also about Danny DeVito in a fat suit who wants to kill children, and takes Christopher Walken's son, who does a Christopher Walken impression, down to the sewer where he is, held captive. Actually, that's not true. The sun doesn't go anywhere. Christopher Walken goes there. Interesting. Well, it's also about a lady who's brought back to life by cats licking her. So I have
such problems with that.
I think the cats have problems with that too. That was not our intention. Like, I don't know what happened.
So Tim and I are both cat owners. I feel like it would be really appropriate if one of our cats, like, just came to the microphone at some point during this episode. Maybe that'll happen.
Actually, my cat's just staring at me across the room right now. So, Tolkien, how do you feel about bringing people back to life by licking them? Okay, we'll find thanks out. Very much. Yeah.
We'll find out when you fall out a window.
Yeah, right. Well, I live on the first floor, so I'm not falling out of any windows.
Well,
I guess accidents I could still can happen. Fall. Yeah, you're right. I'm not going to sleep tonight.
Okay.
Thanks. Great. Yeah. Okay, so let's start with the beginning of the movie in which Pee-wee Herman takes his son and chucks him into the world's largest sewer.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so yeah. We're clear.
Yeah, no, that's, yep.
Kids movie. Batman.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. So the Penguin is this deformed creature.
Yep.
Who actually, the interesting connection, kills the cat inside his little holding pen thing.
That's right. At
the beginning of the film.
Yep.
And then his parents get drunk and we're like, let's kill our kid because that's more humane than raising him, you know, as a member of society somehow. And so they chuck him into the Gotham River. In the park, which connects to the sewers, in which he is raised by tiny men in penguin suits,
yep.
Who are supposed to be real penguins.
Somehow.
Flash forward 33 years.
Oh, boy.
You know, so Batman is gone and returned, you know, and it's Christmas in Gotham. Yeah. And that's the beginning of the setup of this movie.
Yeah, this movie is really where this series starts to unravel for me a little bit.
Yeah, it only took one film.
Yeah, I know. I know. Batman 89, I think, is a much, much stronger film than this one overall.
I agree. And this is definitely Tim Burton, I'm going to do what I want movie, as opposed to the studio going, okay, that's nice, but we need you to kind of do stuff for us.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure there were studio notes. I mean, there's never not, but there definitely felt like they were like giving him a lot of leeway because Batman was such a successful film. They probably felt like, well, you know, he has a good sense for these things. So just like, it made so much money for us. Just let him do that. Let him do whatever he wants to do. And like, it'll be fine. It seemed crazy last time, but it worked.
Yeah. Normally I don't like it for studio meddling. Like some of the movies you watch and you can just feel the studio.
Oh my God. Yeah.
Like meddling in it. This film kind of needed that a little bit. Actually, when I was a kid, I wasn't allowed to see this in theaters.
Oh, interesting.
It came out in 92, so I would have been 92. I can't remember. It came out in June, so it was almost 5, I think. And so something like that. And my aunt went to go see it first and came home to my parents and said, my brother and I, they cannot go see this movie.
Yeah.
and I remember being so mad at her, like so mad, harboring feelings of revenge and stuff for years and years and years and years. And then when I finally sit down and think about what this movie is, you absolutely not want your children to see this movie.
Of course not. No way.
It's about a monster in the sewers who wants to like take babies and kill them and mutilate them before he kills them, you know, because his like bid for mayor didn't work, but that he didn't really even want to do that to begin with. Like, it's like, oh, what a, now you could argue there's a lot of pathos in here. Like, there's a lot of subtext that you'd have, but you really have to read into it.
You really have to look for it.
Yeah, like he's an abandoned child. Like, there's a great movie here in which the Penguin is an abandoned child and Batman is two orphans who come at a clash, and that movie is really never told.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, that subtext is there, I guess. Like you said, but you really do have to kind of look for it. And yeah, that is kind of a missed opportunity, but it's also a totally different story to tell. I really do feel like Tim Burton really wanted to tell the Penguin story. And
yeah, well, his heart's with the monsters, not with the heroes.
Yeah, exactly. He had to tell the Batman story, but he wanted to tell the Penguin story. So he tried to find a way to tell both.
Right.
But he wasn't really able to do either one well as a result. One could argue.
Yeah, he sacrificed.
Yeah.
He sacrificed the Batman story to tell the Penguin story, but because he still had to tell a story about... Because he still had to tell a story about Batman, then everything kind of get lost in the shuffle.
Yeah, I would also argue that I think the throwing Catwoman in here.
Right, I was going to say exactly the same.
Yeah,
and there's Catwoman.
Yeah,
yeah, and Max Schreck, and then
there's Max Schreck. Yeah, there's a lot going on.
Yeah, and if you thought Batman and Robin was overstuffed,
right,
if you thought Amazing Spider-Man 2 was overstuffed, anything like. There's a lot of villainry at work here. And the movie's not really overly long to have all these multiple stories going.
It's true. It's true. It's not really long enough to support that many plot lines.
No. But there really isn't. There's a lot of stopping and going plots, but not a lot to get there. And now I'm speaking of this movie like I don't like it, but
yeah,
I still sit down and watch it and I'm like, yeah, Batman. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
And part of that is because I really like, I'm a big Tim Burton guy.
Yeah.
And so even his like lesser, more mediocre movies, I'm still like, yeah, it's Tim Burton. Like I enjoy this aesthetic very much. And there's, even though it's, some of the dialogue is definitely hokey and
yes,
probably could have used a few more passes, you know, at the computer. There's still a lot to it that I enjoy. I enjoy it because it's definitely Tim Burton's Batman as opposed to just Batman.
Sure.
Yep. Maybe that's why I'm a little bit more forgiving with it, because I'm like, yeah, I like Tim Burton and I like Batman, and these two things that I really enjoy are kind of combined together in this film.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah, I get that.
That being said, Batman is a killer and should never be allowed out to fight for justice. Yeah. Like he blows a clown up at one point with dynamite. Like,
it's true.
And smiles when he does it. Like,
yeah, he really doesn't have any remorse about it.
No, he has no remorse. And there's like hokey things. Like, you know that scene at the beginning where the bat signal goes on because there's trouble in Gotham Square, you know, the other two blocks of Gotham. That's not the Monarch Theater.
Right.
You know, all the bat signals, all the reflective things are coming and like hitting him in the room. And then he stands up and the bat signal's behind him. And all that stuff. It's a super good looking scene. Yep. But my first thought is like, what if people are in that room? Like, what if you're holding a party and people sneak off and they're just in the room when the back thing goes on and they're like,
what's going on?
Why do you have this?
Yeah.
There's a lot of and what happens if you're not in that room? Like, do you still not know if the bat signal's on?
Truth.
There's a lot to it like that, that this movie.
You raise some very good questions here.
I know I do. I know. You will notice in this film that the aesthetic of Gotham looks quite different.
Yeah, it's already shifting. It's already shifting from that first outing to something a little different.
Well, I think that's because, I know that's because Anton First, the designer of the first film, committed suicide.
That's right.
Before the production of this film.
Yes.
And so they went with I think his name's Bo Welch instead. Mm-hmm. It is a very cool looking Gotham.
Actually. Oh yeah. I like the look of it a lot actually.
Yeah, I do too. Even like his, I didn't like his suit as a kid as much. Like I liked the more like physique as opposed to, you know, he looks like a statue in the city. I like the more like I am a human type looking costume, but at, like appreciating art design, watching this film, I'm like, that was a good idea.
Yeah.
Yeah. It looks really cool. And so I actually had a story about the Batmobile I wanted to tell last podcast and I forgot, and so I'm going to tell it now. Since it's the same Batmobile.
It is, yeah.
Anton First is the creator of all this stuff, and so they make the Batmobile. They do, and you know, and they all this stuff. They build it, and it looks great, and it's this awesome, sleek Art Deco, you know, machine. And everyone's looking at it, and they're like, "Wow, this is great! How do you get in?" Crap. They didn't put doors on the Batmobile. And so they turned it into the cockpit type airplane fighter thing. But the only reason that ever existed is because they designed and built this beautiful machine that didn't have doors.
That's so funny. I did not know that story.
Yeah. And so they had to like dismantle part of it and make it so this part would move so they could get in and out of the car.
That's so funny.
Isn't that funny?
Yeah.
Yeah, and for Batman at this time, for to sit in the costume, the suit wasn't that bendable, and so he only wore half a suit.
Oh, and wow.
So whenever he's sitting in the car, he's only wearing from the waist up.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I have heard that. That actually does sound familiar.
Yeah, Val Kilmer had to do the same thing. I don't know if George Clooney or Christian Bale did, but I know that the other two did. Actually, speaking of not moldable suits, there's a scene in this movie when he's battling Catwoman on the roof.
Yep.
You know, this woman who just became, you know, a costume fighter, and he who has trained all his life to do this, you know.
Right, but she's kicking his ass. Yeah.
But she's kicking his ass, right?
Right.
He throws acid at her, you know, as you do,
because
that's what you do in a fight that you're losing.
That's how you fight fair.
That's how you fight fair, Batman. Yeah. That's how you fight fair. But he drops down and like lands in a crouch.
Yep.
And it's like a millisecond of it. But I look at it and go, that's the most Batman thing you've done all film. Fall through down a building and land in a crouch. That would be it right there. It's one of the most Batman. It's one of the most Batman moments of the film. Actually,
sad,
some kind
true.
Of physical movement. It's almost like the Darth Vader problem. Like, you know, he could kick everybody's butt,
that's
but
true.
The suit won't let him. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's the Darth Vader probs.
Hashtag Darth Vader problems.
Hashtag Darth Vader probs. David Prowse knows what he's talking about. Prowse knows. I know. So what do you think of this soiree of a film?
Soiree. I have my problems with the pacing of it. I have my problems with the focus on the villains and having Batman kind of feel like an afterthought. As a kid watching it, and I saw this a couple of years after I had seen the 89 Batman film, so I was a little bit older. As a kid, I really enjoyed it. Just like another Batman film, like, this is fun, this is still cool. I'm not quite old enough to remember this film coming out. Though I was among the living,
that's nice.
Yeah, it is nice, isn't it? But no, I don't remember it coming out, but I remember seeing it a few years later, probably around the time Batman Forever came out that I first saw it.
95.
Yeah.
95. Okay.
That sounds about right.
That might be about the time that I ended up seeing it too, cause I wasn't allowed in 92.
Yeah.
So it took a little bit of time. But I actually don't remember watching it for the first time. I remember having all the toys from McDonald's and not understanding why that was a terrible thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Can we talk about how there were toys from McDonald's for this movie where the Penguin wanted to murder children?
Oh, absolutely. But not just murder them. This is like, he's like, and well, you know, wow, shoot, what is the line? Now I can't remember the line, but he's like, the sexes are equal.
Yes.
And, you know, all this stuff. So he's basically, but before that, he's like, we'll basically cut off their giblets and, feed them to the penguins or something.
It was, it was disturbing. It was just disturbing.
Horribly. And it's funny because I've seen this movie as a kid, sometimes I have I don't process the film the same way.
Yep.
So, like, I'm not really listening to the dialogue. I'm not dissecting it the same way. And so it took a long time. Someone had to point out to me. They're like, no, that's what he's talking about. And I'm like, oh, this is a very
right
appropriate
then.
Movie for children.
Yeah, no. Yeah.
Yeah.
Very.
Yeah, very, very inappropriate movie for children. I would argue that maybe Alfred is a better Alfred in this movie. He's less this way. Yeah, we're at a party with hundreds of people, right. But let's go into this room.
Yeah, inconspicuous.
Yep. So yeah, he's better at that.
Yeah,
in this film, although he doesn't really have need for it. So I don't know. The only time that he could have flubbed it is when Bruce Wayne and Selina Kyle are macking it on the couch.
And he
goes off to do something, and he's like, make up an excuse, like a Sonic, a dirty limerick, something. And he's like, one has just sprung to mind. So, Alfred's here, like, I've been waiting to do this for years.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
Finally, I get my chance.
There's a lot, you know, and the sassy Alfred is there. I like the moment where Bruce is repairing the Batmobile, or he's basically building a new one. Actually, that's a very Batman moment thing to do. Like this is a guy that can do this.
Yeah.
You know, you don't get that in any of the other movies. In Nolan's movies, he gets all his stuff from Lucius Fox. He doesn't build any of it himself.
That's right. You're right.
And so he fixes the autopilot. That would be his big mechanical thing.
Yeah.
And makes his own batarangs. But there's not a lot of inventing your own device going on with him. And so arguably that might be the best moment, but, he says, oh no, I don't want to go to the costume party. Oh, well, actually maybe Selina Kyle might be there.
All right.
I hate you.
If I must.
Yes. Actually that scene, I really like that whole scene from the beginning in which, you know, everybody's wearing a mask except the two people who do wear masks. And then she kind of freaks out. And, you know, he's, you know, world's greatest Captain Obvious, you know.
Yeah.
He actually, world's greatest detective Batman is not in Tim Burton's movies.
Yeah.
Like, really. He has his little detective moment off screen when he puts together the Joker's formula. And then, but there's no detecting in Batman Returns.
Yep.
At all.
No,
his greatest moment is when he confronts the Penguin for the first time, and the Penguin's like, upstanding mayor stuff. And he's like,
yeah.
You're not the mayor. Like, good. Good, Batman.
That is good.
You did good, Batman.
Good job.
Now here's a rose for your parents' grave.
You know? Oh, single tear.
Batman doesn't cry. He mourns, but he doesn't cry. I say that we like this movie, and we've kind of been smashing it the whole time. So I want to reverse.
Let's talk about the good things about this movie, because there are good things.
There are good things about this movie. You go first.
There are good things, but I can't think of them. So why don't
I do have stuff. I can say them if you want. Batman dueling it out with the Red Triangle Gang.
That's good. Yeah, true. That is true.
You know, he does it twice. You know, he comes in, he does say, I mean, he does save Gotham. I mean, you can't judge action sequences in the 90s as to what they are today.
Well, yeah, it's true. Yeah, you have to look at it as a product of its time.
That's right. They're just not the same. They're just not the same thing. It's like we don't judge the action sequences in Star Wars by, like, you can't watch Star Wars A New Hope and then watch Revenge of the Sith and be like, why aren't the lightsaber battles the same?
Sure.
You know, it's just a different era. It's different requirements for different audiences. I said different a lot. I'm going to get a thesaurus.
Different.
So anyway, the Red Triangle Gang, that's cool. The aesthetic of the film is very well done. Costumes.
Yep.
Set pieces, all of that. It's very, very cool looking. Because you're living in this world that's obviously fictional, you know.
Sure.
I don't think Burton's Batman films pretend to be anything but. I mean, we kind of talked about in the first one, the last podcast, where like maybe it's supposed to be realistic, you know, or, you know, a world with consequences at least.
Sure.
And so, but you still know that you're living in a fantasy world. Like, it's not, you know, these things do not happen. These kinds of things do not happen with the ways in which they happen, I guess.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so that, you know, that's good. Christopher Walken being ultimate Christopher Walken.
Like definitive Christopher Walken here.
It's true. When I think of Christopher Walken in films, like, it's this movie where you're like, oh, that's Christopher Walken.
Yep.
You know, other movies he's acting. This movie he's really not. He just
showed up and just said the words they told him to say.
Yeah, pretty much.
As Christopher Walken.
Yeah. As Christopher Walken. But that's fine. I have no problem with that.
It's great. It's better than fine.
Yeah, he's incredibly watchable because yes. Yeah. And then his son, who was hired because he could do a Christopher Walken impression, you know, Dad, we have to go. You know,
yeah.
We have to go downstairs.
Yeah, yeah, you know, it's true. He basically is just doing Christopher Walken impression the whole time.
Yeah, but I knew even as a child that was his son. So
right,
it's not a mystery. I mean, I guess the first word he says is Dad, but still,
he
could have been talking to the mayor. You don't know.
Yeah,
yeah.
I do like, you know, you alluded earlier to it being sort of like wealthy. Mirror image of, you know, wealthy
socialite.
Yeah, you know, born to wealthy parents. Parents are killed / parents try to kill him. Mm-hmm. One is a freak. One tries to look like a freak. I like that mirror image, and I didn't get that until I was an adult rewatching it. You know, I definitely missed it, and I think that's definitely something that Tim Burton put there on purpose, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that's one thing about it. Like, you can watch this as a kid and just be like, yay, Batman saving the day. But like, as an adult, you watch it and you're like, wait, what?
Is Batman really doing anything helpful?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And I he does, certainly.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, if he didn't remix that CD with Alfred, then everyone would have had Cobblepot as mayor.
That's right.
That really is the most heroic thing he does in the film. That's his
yes.
I saved the day moment.
Yeah, no, that's true.
Sitting in the cave with his glasses.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, but I mean, this film is still educational. I mean, I learned what fishy SWAT is because of this movie.
There you go. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so did Batman.
So did Batman. So, like, it's fishy SWAT, sir.
Yeah.
It's supposed to be cold.
Bruce Wayne is a billionaire, but doesn't know what vicious why is. So,
you know,
so,
that is odd. You know, but he also had never been in that dining room before in the first movie.
I suppose.
You know, that's probably a little bit more of a billionaire thing.
That's true.
Yeah. But, hey, it's cool. Whatever.
Yeah, that's good.
Let's talk about Michelle Pfeiffer as Catwoman.
All right.
We've had quite a few Catwomans on screen.
Yeah, that's true.
And so I think that she's good for what she's given.
Yes.
I think she fits into the world that they're presenting really well.
Yes.
You know, she's not pretending to be in a different movie or anything like that.
I agree with that. I don't like the way she's used in this movie. I think that maybe she's underused. And just her story is kind of weird and doesn't make sense to me. But I like what they were trying to do, and I think Michelle Pfeiffer did a fine job with what she was given, yes.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Yep.
Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah, she's doing a fine job for what she's given.
Yes.
And there really isn't any more to that.
Yeah.
She was like... I still really haven't seen the Catwoman on screen that I would like to see.
Same. No, that's not blasphemy. I don't think it's blasphemy. I think a lot of people would say that.
Yeah, I think maybe Anne Hathaway came the closest.
Yeah.
But it didn't click for me the way that I wanted it to.
I agree. I liked Anne Hathaway a lot as Catwoman, but it's still not like what I picture when I read like Long Halloween, or, you know, it's not.
Yeah, that she's not. I didn't buy Anne Hathaway as dangerous.
Yeah, it was, but I mean, she wasn't trying to be, and she wasn't written that way. So it's like that's okay. I give that a pass because it's not like they tried and failed.
Yeah, like a villain dangerous, but just like this is a woman who will and could do anything to get what she wanted. And the movie definitely kind of was written that way and brought to that point. And she was definitely really smart and like all this stuff. But it just didn't click the right way. But that's neither here nor there. That's a different movie.
I agree. Yeah.
Yeah. Any final thoughts on Batman Returns?
It's a fun movie as a kid, even if it's scary for kids. But watching it as an adult, I see what Tim Burton was trying to do. But ultimately, I just don't think this is a great Batman movie. I think it's actually a pretty decent movie. But I wish the characters' names were not Batman and Penguin and Catwoman.
Yeah, I maybe agree with that, but like I said, because I recognize this film as a Batman, Tim Burton presents Batman as opposed to, you know, Warner Brothers presents Batman or whatever, then I'm pretty okay with like most of what is happening. The bad part is that like a huge amount of kids, like this was their, this is Batman on the big screen for a long time.
That's right.
To them, you know, and then Schumacher right after that, who, you know, a Batman Forever does have its very Batman moments, arguably more than this film.
Yeah.
But then dips into its own crevices. I mean, all of the films really, the 80s and 90s Batman movies really have their pitfalls in their own little areas.
Definitely.
And so, but hey, what are you going to do? A Batman movie on screen is better than no Batman movie on screen.
I agree. Yep. I agree. And I enjoyed it as a kid and I still enjoy it with nostalgia now, but just not in the same way that I used to enjoy it.
Nostalgia is one of your greatest friends when watching films.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Agreed. Yeah.
Or one of the worst enemies. Anyway.
It can go either way. Tim, where can everybody find us on the interwebs?
People can find us on the interwebs. They can find us at Twitter at Beer With Geeks. They can find us at Facebook at facebook.com/beerwithgeeks. They can email us at beerwithgeeks@gmail.com. I almost forgot that one. What that one was. You can also find us on a new podcast called...
What?
I know. You can also find us on a new podcast called Supergirl TV Talk, in which Frank and I discuss all the news, rumors, and then eventually episode breakdowns and predictions and rumor and all the news, all that stuff for the new series committed Supergirl TV show on CBS starting this fall. And so you can find that on iTunes as well as a place that I'm blanking on.
SupergirlTVTalk.com.
Thanks.
TV Supergirl on Twitter.
Thank you. Thank you. It's not written in front of me. It's still so new.
It's also fresh and new, yes.
It is shiny and new. I don't know what that's from.
Neither do I, but it works.
Shiny and new, like a virgin. Woo! Okay, oh, there you go. I knew I'd get there. Okay.
You got it.
All right, well, ending on Madonna. And I got nothing left to say. All right, so cheers.
Cheers.
This podcast is intended for entertainment and information purposes only. All character names, sound effects, and quotes are registered trademarks and/or copyrights of their respective trademark and copyright holders. All original content of this podcast is the intellectual property of Thought Bubble Audio Studios, unless otherwise indicated.